Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where conversations about work and money are fun, relatable, and informative.
So shout out to the listener that I ran into in the streets. You know who you are. I appreciate the kind words. And if you are new to the show or been around for a while and haven't done so already, be sure to join our free private email community where you'll receive access to work and money tips, interesting reads, and more. You'll also receive our free 15-minute money plan as a gift. Visit paybal.co/email to sign up. Again, that's paybal.co/email.
And financial planning month is coming to a close. And today we're talking to an entrepreneur and stock trading boss, someone that we've had in the queue to have on the show for like, what, 2 years, man?
Yeah, you know, days go slow, years go fast.
So in this conversation, we hit work, money, and entrepreneurship. So I guess I call that the P&B trifecta. And so Jason Brown has over 10 years of trading experience and is a graduate of Wayne State University with a Bachelor's of Science in Finance. At age 23, Jason took a $10,000 student loan and turned it into a six-figure trading account, which that's a very interesting story in itself, and we'll get to that early in the episode. So he is now the founder of The Brown Report, a stock market coach and trader. And each week he puts out stock market analysis and strategy session videos to keep the people hip to what's going on in these stock streets. And these videos walk traders through stocks with high profit potential and stocks to stay away from to avoid losses, which is a hot topic right now. He's helped thousands of students learn how to open their first trading account, read stock charts, and gain confidence. So here's our conversation with Jason. And we hope you enjoy. So thanks for joining us, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you guys and your listeners.
Definitely, man. So talk about turning this student loan into a six-figure trading account, because that sounds like supreme adulting.
Yeah, except I did it when I was supreme kidding, when I was like a college student. So when I first got involved with the stock market, you may not know this, but I was working a retail job. So I was just trying to figure out how to make $50 a week so that I didn't have to work weekends, because I made like $8 an hour. So I was always good with math. So I was like, OK, I get paid about $64. They take taxes out. It's about $50. So if I can figure out how to work, make $50, I wouldn't have to work weekends. And so a little bit before that, I had took $2,000 to Chase Bank when I was about 18. And I told them, you know, I want to invest. So she said, she literally asked me two questions. She was like, you know, what's your goal? I'm like, I want to be rich. You know, isn't that everybody's goal? Like, why else do you invest? I thought it was a silly question, but like, why else do you invest? And then she said, so you want aggressive funds, right? And I just said, sure. So that those are only two questions she asked and took my money. And I put $2,000 in, and I came back about 2 years later, about 2021, and it went from $2,000 down to $700. I was like, okay, I thought you go to the professionals because you don't want to lose money. So I had an aha moment. I'm like, well, they can lose money too. And so I said, so give me my money back. I can do this on my own, because I realized they weren't superhuman. If they could lose money, I felt like I could lose my own money. And so I took the $700. I spent like $200 to make myself feel better after losing $1,300 of it, right? I think I went shopping or something.
Yeah, I was going to ask what you bought, because I probably would have went and got food or some random tech device that I don't use.
I don't even remember, but I probably bought shoes or something that I could tangibly see, since $1,300 just vanished, right? And so to speed up the story, I took the $500. And I was working for Sprint PCS at the time. And I was like, our stock was $5. And so when I bought the stock, I was like, I could buy 100 shares at $5 a share. And all I needed to move is 50 cents. And so I was like, I don't need this big $10, $20, $100 movement stock to double and triple. I just needed to move 50 cents. So I felt like even a dummy could find something that would move 50 cents. And that's where my confidence was at. But it was at least higher than taking it to somebody else, because they already lost me money. And so when I bought the stock at $5, as soon as I bought it, it fell down to $4.50. So I'm like, I knew this doesn't work. Soon as I get in, the stock wants to drop. So then it went back up to $5. And I'm like, yes, I just needed to go to $5.50. And then it fell back down to $5 again. I'm like, it's rigged. They know I need the 50 cents. They won't let me get it. But this time I had like, you know how you have those aha moments in your life? And so when the stock came back up to five, I said, I've seen this before. I'm going to get out at five because I know it's going to fall back down to four. And it fell down to four. And then I got in at four and it went back up to five. So instead of making $50, I made $100. Mm-hmm. I was hooked at that point. And so I didn't know if you drew that out on a piece of paper, that would be called a channeling stock, meaning the stock was channeling between two price points, $4, $5, back down to four, $5, back down to four. Mm-hmm. If you draw that out on the paper, kind of looks like a snake kind of crawling in the grass in between two points. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so from that, I was like, well, what if I would have had $1,000? I was like, whoa, what if I would have had $10,000? And so I started thinking, how do I get $10,000 into this account so I can play these, at least this specific pattern? So I took, I had a scholarship to Wayne State. They paid tuition. I applied for student aid, even though I didn't need it because I would qualify because my mother didn't make enough money. And I knew that they would double pay the account and that I would get the refund. And once I got the refund, I took it straight to the market and I turned that $10,000 student loan into about $120,000. But I got my first taste off that $50, that $500 turned into $100. And I realized if I had more money and it did the same thing, it would return. So that's literally how it happened.
Yo, that is the most responsible use of a student refund check that I think I've ever heard. What about you, Marcus?
It's definitely better than any I've ever done and anyone that I know in my immediate circle has ever done. But I do have a question there. Is that a gamble? Well, I guess someone told us that the stock market is not a gamble. shout out to Tila. But is that something that you would recommend for others to do? Or is that because you were young and that was just a chance that you wanted to take?
I know Tila, by the way, when you said that name, I'm like, my girl, Tila Holcomb. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's cool. She's been on here too. So as far as is that a gamble or not, here's how I like to explain it, or at least here's how I like people to think about it. I like to look at it as calculated risk. And the best way that I think I can help people look at something like that, like, oh, I wouldn't have did that. That was risky. I want you to think about what we do as investors or stock traders or chart readers, because we're technical as looking at these patterns. Just think of us as the weatherman, okay? The weatherman looks at a pattern on whatever that machine is that's on TV, and they look at these patterns, they show the clouds coming in, and they say what? They say it's about a 70% chance it's going to rain. It's a 50% chance it's going to rain, or, you know, it's 80% chance we're going to have sun. Are they right 100% of the time? No, but about 70 to 80% of the time, their prediction is on. Why? Because they've seen that pattern so many times and say, typically when we see this pattern, it's going to produce rain. Typically when we see this pattern, it's going to produce sunshine. Typically around this time of year, this is what happens. And so it wasn't a gamble in the sense that I've been looking at that pattern for about a year now, because I started with 500, then it turned to 600, then 700. So I'm like, I got obsessed with looking for these patterns and thought, what other patterns are out there? And so when I realized it was that pattern and a few other ones, then it wasn't gambling anymore. It was like reading the weather. It was like calling the forecast. I knew that there's a 20% chance I'd be wrong, but 80% chance I'd be right. And so that was the name of the game. So, and I don't look at it as gambling. I look at it as calculated risk.
Got you, man. So what got you interested in stock trading in the first place?
The origin is we was broke. That's the origin. You know, we grew up just really broke. My mother was a single parent mother. My father passed when I was two due to a car accident. Just, you know, just something that happens. But she did the best that she could with two boys. But I just realized, like, why don't we have what other people have? Why does our house have bars on the window? How come, you know, I went over to my best friend's house and I'm like, wait a minute. I thought beds was only for grownups because we slept on the floor on like a pallet. So I'm like, my boy got a bed and he only like 10. So I became money conscious at a young age. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think being African-American, coming up, when you look at the stock market and you think about wealth, you always saw Caucasian older men. And so I'm like, why is it that all the Caucasian older men are in the stock market? So I was like, that's something I got to learn. Like, we broke, we don't have much. Everybody I see that they say, how did they make their fortune in the stock market? At least, you know, when you read the paper or you hear about people buying businesses, but you're like, how did they make their money? They made their fortune in the stock market in the 80s, the 70s. And so I was just always like, I have to get into the stock market. I don't know how it works, but I'm going to get into it someday. So that's literally where the spark came from, just from being broke. And then also reading the stories of the people who have created wealth. It typically was always in the stock market, or they got an inheritance since passed down. Where did it come from? Their great grandfather was in the stock market. So that's literally where the spark came from.
That's real, man. So what was the first place you went to start learning about stocks and trading?
Okay. So don't laugh at me, but my two cousins, they took a course that was about $10,000. And I think if you're just like, oh, if you buy the course at 10, you can bring a friend. So you could split the cost and it's 5,000. I didn't even have the 5,000. So my cousin was like, you want to take it with me? I'm like, I don't have even 5,000. And so I did what I could. I actually went and checked out a book called, I think it was like Day Trading something. It was something about day trading, because I was trying to figure out how to make these 50 cents a day or a week. And so I read like a day trading book. And when they took the course, you know, I asked, could I look over some of their material and stuff like that when it was over. But literally, I had checked out a book from the library. That was like my first exposure to any type of material, because I didn't have any money to buy anything. I only had that $500, and I was trying my hand at that, you know, with the company I worked for. It was a Sprint for that $5.
So let me ask you this. This is something I struggle with, so I'm assuming the audience does too. Quite literally, it sounds like the first time you went through your company, but how do you even access the stock market? Like, I know there's a lot of apps and websites now, but how did you even go about purchasing that first stock, or how do you go about doing it now?
So that's the power of the time that we live in right now. Back in the day, you would have had to get a stockbroker. You'd have to have a certain net worth for them to even want to deal with you. Literally today, it's like opening an online bank account. Back then, I opened an online, quote unquote, trading account or banking account with Options Express. They got acquired by Charles Schwab. So I trade with Charles Schwab now. But literally, you just log on to the account. And just like anything else, people are familiar with PayPal, Vimeo, or Venmo Cash. You literally log on, give your social security number, fill out the questions, and you get a trading account. And so then you get access to all their tools, their charts, their quotes, the ticker symbols to buy and sell, see what the prices are going for. And then just like anything else, you can transfer money in three different ways. You could do an ACH. You can do a wire transfer, which will cost you like $20. You can mail in a check. However you want to deposit the funds, but typically most people set up an electronic transfer, and you just link to your local bank account, which could be Chase or Bank of America or Credit Union, and you can move money in between the accounts. But once the money's in the brokerage account, the online trading account, you can buy stock or options with it. It's that simple.
Appreciate that.
You mentioned a little bit about what you were doing in corporate America, the day gig world. So when did you start getting the entrepreneurial itch?
So I got the entrepreneurial itch when, I want to share it in this format, is that when I took that $500 and I made the first $100, I was like, well, how do I get 10,000 into the account?
Hustle.
So when I get that 10,000 into the account from the student loan, you know what I said to myself after that, right?
I'm like, 20,000?
No, I'm like, how do I get 100,000? It kept going up with zeros, right? So I'm like, well, how do I get 100,000 in that account? And then once I turned the $10,000 student loan to a six-figure trading account, I was like, how do I get $1 million trading account, like $1 million worth of capital? And so I knew I couldn't take another student loan. I wasn't even in school at that point. So my point is, as you fast forward, I start thinking, how do I get $1 million into a trading account? And by this point, I was trading about full time for about 3 years after that. I dropped out of college, was trading full time for 3 years, making the most money I've ever made without a degree. I eventually went back and got my degree, my bachelor's in finance from Wayne State. But when I went back, and I came out, I started thinking again, how do I get this $1 million? And I said, you know, 3-4 years later, I was also starting to pay for people's, I was like, oh, is there any stock trading communities or programs out there? And at the time I had was paying like a monthly membership fee to someone else's site. And I got to a point where when I picked a trade and analyzed it, it was the same trade that that person analyzed on their webinar or inside their program. And so just the person that I am, I was like, I think I'm getting as good as him. Now, whether that's the right way to compare it or not, or maybe I'm just getting good at this, maybe that's a better way to say it, but I looked at it as I'm getting as good as him. And so I was like, I'm going to start tweeting out my trades and blogging about it. And I started tweeting and blogging about it. And people were making money off my tweets, off my blog. They're like, dude, that free trade you put out on your blog, I just made $1,000 or $2,000. Wow. And that was what I needed to say, okay, I'm paying him, which was fair. But I was like, I wonder if people would pay me because I'm picking the same stuff. People are making money. And so that's what literally spent me into, I'm like, this could be my key to generating a $1 million trading account. And so that's what took me down to entrepreneur. I always had the entrepreneurial bug. Always, you know, from the time I went to that bank and said, I want to be rich. I didn't know how, but I always had, I was either going to get rich by investing or building a business. But I was like, this is the opportunity to do both. What I love to do, which is investing. And I know it works because I flipped that student loan. And to become an entrepreneur, I was like, I couldn't have asked for a better scenario. And so that's what led me down the road of like, well, how do you build a website? How do you, when people pay, if they get access, when they don't pay, how do you remove it? So that led me down a whole nother path of studying internet marketing and building a business around this.
So I remember when we talked at FinCon, either 2 or 3 years ago at this point, you were telling me that you went to launch your own thing, and then you actually had to go back to work. And I think you might have to go back to work a couple of times. So can you talk about that process? What led to you having to go back? And also any lessons you might have learned along the way as you were trying to straddle that line between corporate America and getting your own thing off the ground?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny to tell this story now, but it wasn't funny when I was going through it. So I made like $120,000. Right. I'm 21. So I do everything a kid from Detroit with a lot of money with no guidance should do. I bought a Lexus. I put it on 20 inch rims. I had a bachelor pad in the suburbs. I paid no taxes for 3 years. I mean, just I thought I was going to be able to write off my car. I got some bad tax advice. But by the time the IRS caught up with me, they're like, write off your car. You work from home on the computer. Like, how did you think you're going to be able to write off your car? This isn't a business expense. I'm like, I don't know, but somebody told me I could write off my car. So pay people well for good advice. Pay professionals well, because I got some bad advice, but I realized it was either free or I was going to the people who do regular W-2 taxes. But anyway, so I made a lot of money. I'm out here living recklessly for like 3 years. Come year number four, I risk about, I think it was 250 or 300,000 trying to make $500,000, because I'm like, oh, I'm going to cash out this condo. I'm going to rent it out. Anyway, I ended up losing all the money. So I lost all the money. I owed 3 years worth of taxes. And that was it. I hit rock bottom. So I had to move back home with my mother. One of the most humbling life experiences when you're out there making more money than your mother and more money than most adults. And, you know, you got the lifestyle, the cars, the time. You're in a prestigious industry, the stock market, at a young age. And then to just lose it all and have to go back home. So I moved back home. But, you know, for me, that's what taught me the formula, because I moved back home and I got a job. That is at the time when I went to work for Verizon Wireless. And so I had the formula at this point. I said, I know what the formula is. I'll get a job. I'm going to pay taxes as I go. But I based my lifestyle off the hourly, and I used the commission. So it was a commission sales job. I based my lifestyle off the hourly, meaning I never had my expenses go over what I made hourly. And I took my commission and I used it to get back into the stock market. And then every year, I knew the IRS would take my tax return. I wouldn't get a refund because I owed.
Snipes.
Right? But I spent it, you know, I made lemonade out of my lemon, so to speak. I was like, okay, it's going to take 5 years for them to take the money back roughly. And so I just knew that that would give me time to build my trading account again. And then they had tuition reimbursement. So that's when I went back to school. So I went back to Wayne State after dropping out. And then I knew what I wanted to study this time, which is why I studied finance. I got my bachelor's degree. So then I'm working for Verizon. I leave Verizon again. Well, not again. The first time I left Sprint, I leave Verizon. I take all my money. I go into the stock market again. This time I'm like, I'm not going to do what I did last time. Sure enough, I did what I did last time. I lost all the money again.
How?
And, you know, I just took a stupid trade. I took a stupid trade. I think I risked a good 50 or 100,000, something crazy. And I'm like, I just need to make $8,000 this week. And so that's when I realized, like, I'm trading without a plan. I'm like, I didn't even need $8,000 this week. So why did I risk a majority of my account trying to make $8,000? And so lost all the money. But again, I had the blueprint at this point. So I went back to work. This time I worked for Comcast, worked my way up the corporate ladder, nice six-figure salary, take all my money, get back into the stock market again. Except this time I was like, okay, I really have something to teach people, because not only did I lose the money and make it back, I lost it again, made it back. And this time I went back into the market and I'm growing my accounts to 500,000 at this point. And that's when I'm building a business around it and teaching it. And I think what was so powerful is that not only was I able to teach, like, oh, look at me, I'm successful, I was able to teach how to get up after being knocked down, how to get back up after being knocked down. And I think that's what makes my teachings a little bit more powerful, is that I'm able to say, look, don't get greedy on this trade. Take a profit. Don't risk more than this much of your account. Right. So I'm a little bit more methodical this time around, because I went through the ups and downs of losing all my money twice and having to move back home. And so, you know, that's how those events transpired. But I always knew the power of having multiple streams of income as well, which is also why I was passionate about building a business around this, because it also helps having an additional stream of income, whether that's working a job and trading or building a business and investing. It always helps to have multiple streams of income. And now I believe a person should have at least four different streams of income.
You hit a lot there, and I didn't want to cut you off. Let's jot down a few questions. I was hitting Rich in the DMs. I was hitting Rich in the IMs over here. I was like, wait a minute, I got a quote. Well, he didn't hit it. So that was actually very thorough. But I feel like for myself and some of the people out there, they're going to be like, what? You know, and that's why I almost jumped in with that. I was like, man, I ain't going to cut him off. He's in the middle of a spill right now. But some people can't even wrap their head around losing $5. Like, there's probably people right now listening to this show like, man, I don't even know how I'm going to get these ramen noodles at the end of the week. And yet you kind of ran through like, yeah, man, I lost $150,000. You know, it was, you know, I had this Lexus on 20s. It was what it was, you know, like. That's something that some people are not going to make in the next 2 or 3 years. So building up to my question is, for those people who want to find that first dollar and then double it, what would be your insight there? Like, where just to start? Like, I'm check to check right now. How do I escape out of that?
So you just gave the answer the answer is in the question, right? And that is, I'm check to check right now. How do I start? Well, the first thing you got to do is get from living a check to check lifestyle. So if you look at my story, what did I do? I moved back home with my mother. I didn't try to maintain a flashy lifestyle or something that I couldn't afford, because even if I got the job, I still had to finish paying taxes. I still had to get back on my feet. And so I think the first thing is humbling yourself and looking around and saying, where can I? There's two ways to generate cash: spend less and make more. That's it. I haven't found a third way. And so you got to look at your expenses and think, where can I cut? And for me, I cut cable. I cut my apartment. I moved back home. I cut everything. The only thing I had was cell phone and a high speed internet bill. That's about it. And then my mother let me eat for free, thank God. But everything else, I cut the fat, no shopping, none of that stuff. But I was focused because I knew I wanted to get back into the game. And so the first way is you can cut your current expenses. We all can. I want to share a quote or a story I heard one time. And I'll be quick with it. But the speaker said, if you ask a person who makes $30,000, how much does it take to live? Like 100%, you need every penny, every dime. And the person would say, without hesitation, $30,000. You say, you go to another person who makes $60,000 and say, how much does it take to live? Food, clothes, shelter, everything. You know, you can't make less than this or it'd be detrimental. And that person would say, 100%, $60,000. And he said, well, wait a minute. What happened to the $30,000? There's a $30,000 gap there. One person said it takes $30,000 to live, keep shelter, food, get to work, et cetera. This person says 60. The difference between the amounts is something called sacrifice. Okay. And so most people aren't willing to sacrifice. So if you look at the things that you could sacrifice, you would realize I really could go without cable. I really could go without eating out. I really could lower my cell phone bill, et cetera. And so that was key for me. I told you I built my lifestyle around the hourly at work. So that's number one. I reduced my lifestyle and expenses and I built it around hourly. Number two, how do you earn more? For me, that was a commission-based job. I knew the more phones I sold, the more people I talked to, I could get my commission to grow. So I'm doubling down on my own theory. I reduced my expenses. I increased my income through commission sales. I was able to get out of the hole quicker. And so to your audience that's listening, you got to think about how can you get out of the hole quicker? There's only those two ways. Somebody might say, well, I don't want to work hard. Okay, you just cut off one of the ways. The other person said, I don't want to give up anything. Okay, you just cut off the other way. So you just stuck then because I don't know another way to produce any money. And so that's where I would start. And when you hear I lost 100,000, I lost a quarter million, you got to take it back to the beginning of the episode when I said I started with $500. So I grew to be working with those different amounts. And so I would encourage people to look into their lifestyle and say, where can I find $500 to $1,000? And, you know, to be honest, if you're a grown adult over the age of 18, you live in America in this digital economy and you can't come up with $500 to $1,000, there's a serious problem. You shouldn't even try to get wealthy yet because these little kids came by. We bought a house on the lake here in Michigan and these little kids came by. And we were on the Nextdoor app, this little app for our community. And they were saying like, hey, we do lawn care and stuff like this. So me and my wife were like, well, I don't want to pick these weeds off the beach. We hired these kids. But when they got here, it was funny. I'm like, they showed up about 7 o'clock. They was like, is 7 okay? Because we got our first job at 6. I'm like, number one, check. These guys are up early hustling. Okay. So I'm like, these little kids go be here. Then they got here. I'm like, how old are y'all? Man, like, I'm 13. I'm 12. I'm 10. So I'm like, whoa. So they in the back pulling weeds. I'm like, how much have y'all made doing this? The young kid or the middle kid was like, we made $2,000 in 2 weeks. I'm like, what? Man. Maybe I should go pull some weeds. And so here's the point of the story. Most people wouldn't humble themselves. Oh, I'm too good to pick weeds. That's a little kid's game. Them little kids was like, we got our buckets. We got our water. Let's pick these weeds and get this money. That's my mindset when I moved back home. I wasn't thinking about anybody laughing, pointing fingers. I'm like, let's get back on our feet because I'm going to have the last laugh. And so we got to look in the mirror and say, what can we do to put ourselves in a better position? And sometimes it's a sacrifice. And sometimes that sacrifice is public because people go see you move back with your mom. They go see you downgraded your car. But does that really matter in the grand scheme of things?
Today's episode is sponsored by EveryPlate. So, there's a lot of meal kit services out there, but EveryPlate gets it right with freshness, convenience, and most importantly, price. At $4.99 per chef-designed meal, EveryPlate is an easy choice when you're trying to keep more money in your wallet and save time on the so what we gonna eat struggle. It's all right here, boo. It's all right here.
Yes, sir. And I have my testimonial ready. Everything I needed came straight to my door. I am keeping it 100 because I could tell y'all these vegetables were fresher than the delivery I could find at my local store, which is insane. And yet they got it done. I went with the easy chicken fajita, cherry glazed pork chops, and Greek burger. You know, I jumped on the burger first. Recipes were easy to follow, scalable to serving choices of my size, and came together in about 30 minutes, despite me not being a 5-star chef or probably a 1-star chef.
Yeah, it's super simple. And so with Every Plate special offer, you can get your first week of meals for only $2.50 per serving. Yes, $2.50. And so for 50% off your first box of Every Plate, go to everyplate.com and enter Paychecks at checkout. Again, visit everyplate.com and enter Paychecks at checkout to get these meals on the low ski. And now back to the show. Yeah, I definitely wasn't hustling like that when I was at a young age. So I think my first job was one of those park jobs where you go with the thing, the claw in the end, you're picking up trash cans, you're picking up other random things that are probably really disgusting. So it's good to hear that some of the youth are out there really hustling like that. But you mentioned sales and commission, and I've done sales for a business services company, and I also worked as a headhunter for a few years. And there's a lot within sales, and a lot of people are intimidated by doing a sales job because they don't think that they have an outgoing personality. So what advice, or I guess, what thoughts would you have to people who are really adverse to the idea of sales?
So the first advice or, you know, encouragement I would give them is you're probably better than you think. You know, have you ever had a bad car sales guy? Have you ever had a bad experience at a restaurant and thought, man, I could have did better than this person? They're not friendly. They didn't say hi. They're too pushy. So first thing is you're probably better than you think. I think most people don't give themselves enough credit. So that's number one. Number two is you also have to realize you get up. Typically, most people work a job that they don't like. And so I always say, you're already doing something that you don't like, get paid for it, right? So if you're going to get up, go somewhere and you don't like it, then at least get the most amount of money. Because you say, I don't like sales. Well, you don't like your current job either. So go do something that's going to pay you more, even if you know, if you're going to be miserable both ways. That's my philosophy. Number three is we live in this digital economy to where you don't necessarily have to do sales. Those little kids didn't sell me. I was looking for the service. So think about what you're good at. Think about what you can do and offer somebody that someone is out there looking for that service. And you don't necessarily have to sell. They're looking for you. All you have to do is show up and perform. And so, it doesn't have to be, I got to get a new job all the time. Maybe you can do babysitting. Maybe you work at a company where you work on Excel spreadsheets. There's somebody out there that's like, I wish somebody could help me with Excel spreadsheet. I'm a college student. Or maybe somebody could build me a little budget in my Excel spreadsheet where I could track my money. You'd be surprised what people are looking for that you offer, that you think about it like, oh, nobody would pay for that. You would be surprised. And so those are the three things that I would say to someone who is nervous about sales or don't think they're good at sales or thinking, how can I make some extra money?
And so when people get into the whole idea of side hustles and creating a business, and I realize that this could be a whole episode in itself, but in terms of quick steps for someone who's like, all right, there is something I'm good at. Yes, it sounds easy enough to just put myself out there, but what are the first things I really need to think about to even put myself in a position or have the infrastructure to even start taking in clients or customers?
So take baby steps, right? These guys who showed up at my house, these kids, I should say, they only took cash. And I wish I could show you the text message, but this is over audio. They told us it would be an extra $20 if we wrote them a check.
Yo.
And I'm like, these kids is hustling, right? So my point is, start with what you have. Everybody has cash, right? So everybody has cash. Most people can write a check, charge a processing fee. You're making a little bit of extra money. So from an infrastructure standpoint, sometimes we like to hold ourselves back. Do I need a PayPal account? Do I need to start with what you have? Tell them you accept cash, okay? Then from there, Google online payment system. Everybody knows about PayPal, not just PayPal, but you got Apple Pay. Most people have an Apple phone. So you just watch a YouTube video on how do I receive an Apple Pay? All a person has to do is put in your phone number and they can pay you. So the information's out there. But first, start with what you have, which is cash. Second, start to look at taking digital forms of payment for credit cards, whether that's Apple Pay, PayPal, Venmo, the Cash App, et cetera. So you have to have a way to get paid. That's first and foremost. So it's hard to offer service and then you're like, how do I pay? And you're like, I don't know. So have a way to get paid first. And I think even before having a way to get paid, have a service that you can offer. So have a service you can offer, have a way to get paid. And I think the third and final step is have a way to get found. Those little kids were on the Nextdoor app. There was no other way I was going to find those kids. So start looking at, how do I get found? First, people always think, well, I need to build a website. Piggyback off a website that's already built, like Craigslist, like the Nextdoor app, eBay, or things like that. If you're selling online products, piggyback off eBay. So don't always feel like you have to go build the infrastructure right out the gate. There's so many ways that you can test the test and see if there's even a marketplace for it with Craigslist, with Nextdoor app, and all these other marketplaces that are out there. So those would be the steps or the infrastructure that you need to get started today, which none of them cost you any money. Craigslist is free. Apple Pay, as long as you have it on your phone, it is free to receive payment. So there's really no excuse. Obviously, when you're starting to take it to another level, the game plan is, okay, how do I build a website? How do I take online payments? How do I get found if someone Google searches me or something like that? That's all next level stuff. But to get started, you can start with what's free.
Yeah, man, you made that very simple for the people. So a lot of our listeners, most of our listeners, even us, are working corporate gigs, and we're kind of straddling that line between what we do by day and having that side hustle or taking that leap into entrepreneurship full time. So any advice for people who are kind of in that in between where it's like, my day job, it's taking up so much time. I need to make more. I need to save more. I can't quite take this leap yet. I can't launch this hustle yet. I need to make more money at the day job. Any advice for those folks who are kind of in that middle stretch?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was in that middle stretch. I was working for a Fortune 50 company. I was a regional manager running three different sales divisions. I had the six-figure salary. And what was happening is I was making nice money in the stock market, but then I was building the business on the side. And so I remember when my online business, I remember when we first hit like $380,000. And I was like, whoa. I make like $110,000 at the day job, and I just made $330,000 on the side business that I work part time. And I remember what one of my mentors told me. I said, when do you go full time? And he said, when the money knocks you over. And I never understood what he meant until that moment when I made $380,000 on my business. And then I made $110,000 at work. I'm like, I think the money getting close to knocking me over. Mm-hmm. But so the couple things to think about, you know, when I built my business, I built it part time because I said, when I go full time, I don't want to work it full time. So that's number one. Number two, I think you got to start thinking about how can you leverage systems? How can you leverage people? That's when I started to look at hiring my first assistant. I'm like, well, I'm at work, but she can be at home. I started looking for work, people who wanted to work from home. And I thought, wow, I could be making money while I'm at work. She could be handling customer service and different things like that. Now, it could have been a he, but it just happened that I hired a she. So I'm not saying only women can work from home, but it just happened to be a female. And so immediately I was able to duplicate myself. Now, she couldn't run a webinar or talk about the stock market, but I was able to duplicate my efforts in the sense that she could handle customer service, website issues. She could handle refunds. She could handle questions that was coming in that I couldn't handle while I was at work. So think about, how can you duplicate yourself either through hiring somebody? And the second way I was able to duplicate myself was through systems. And so I was like, well, what type of business or what can I do that doesn't require me to physically always be there? And I'm thinking, okay, I could record my courses and sell them. People can buy them all day long. They can watch them all day long. And I don't physically have to be there to deliver it. So I was, me personally, I was specifically looking for businesses or a way to monetize my talents that didn't necessarily take more of my time. But even if it takes more of your time, you start to think about hiring people. How can you duplicate yourself? Because most people think, well, if I hire somebody, that's all my profit. Well, that's small time thinking, because if you hire them and you can do twice as much, you would make the same because they took the first half and now you're getting the second half. However, you just bought your time back and you gave somebody a job, which they're happy about. So you got to start thinking about it that way. And the other thing I would encourage people to think about before they, if they're in that in-between stage, is you need more money than you think. So everybody's all about, like, as soon as I make $100,000, once I make $100,000, I'm quitting. No, you need to make $200,000 to kind of match the $100,000 because you got to pay taxes now. If you're a business owner, you're paying for software, systems, websites. You're spending some money on advertising. You got an assistant at this point. So there's other costs associated. You can't just match your income dollar for dollar and be like, I'm out. I'm quitting my job. If you're married, then you're in a privileged position. If you can piggyback off your spouse's benefits, so you don't have to worry about that if they have full-time employment. But if you're not, you do need to say, okay, how much does it cost if I had to buy the same plan that my employer provides? If I had to buy it on the open marketplace, how much would that cost? It's not much as most people think. Sometimes it's $3,000 because your employer's paying $1,500, you're paying $1,500 divided up over 12 months or whatever the case may be. Even if it's $6,000, $8,000, the answer becomes, how do I bake in an extra $8,000 into my overhead? Because now I'm going to be paying for my own insurance. So those are things you need to think about when you're in the in-between stages. And when you start to think about them, then the solutions start to come because you're starting to say, okay, I need to pay for insurance. I need to duplicate myself, which means I need to hire somebody. Okay, so I can't quit my job yet because that's going to cost money. But let me start taking that next step of hiring somebody so I can get double the production. So when you list out what you need to go to the next level and you think about it in those steps, it helps you see the bridge that you need to build so that you can transition to the other side.
For a lot of folks, and self included, and actually I did this for probably years, where I would have a website, some type of business, and I wouldn't want to really invest money in it. I'd be like, you know what? I want to see the money start coming in first, which is obviously the wrong way to go about it. But a lot of people struggle with the realization that they actually need to have help on board to help them get where they want to go. So how does someone know, or is there a guide that you would give people for how to know when you need to hire help? And if you don't have the funds for hiring help, what do you need to start thinking about from there?
You want to begin with the end in mind. There is always something that somebody else can do to help you, right? I remember when I was first looking to add an assistant, I was like, I don't know what I would have them do. And one of my mentors was like, trust me, just hire them. You'll find stuff for them to do. And sure enough, I was like, oh, can you go through and look at these people's username? Oh, can you organize my schedule? Oh, can you coordinate these podcast interviews? Because I can't be on my phone at work. And so the idea is that you always need help. So it's not necessarily when. It's more of a question of what quality of help do you need, right? So if you're starting out day one, you're not going to try to hire a six-figure engineer to come into your business. And he's like, well, what's my job? And you're like, I don't know. I think I'm going to build a website, take some PayPal payments. Like, so you don't need that quality of help yet, right? But can you imagine if you hired a college student for $10 and they said, what's my job? You said, hey, I need you to research how to take PayPal payments. So you see the difference? An engineer would be like, you don't know how to take PayPal payments and you're going to pay me $100,000 to figure that out. You don't even have $100,000. But a college kid is like, for $10, I can hop on Google, figure that out for you, show you how to set that up on your phone. So you always need help. It's just a matter about what quality of help. And number two, if you don't have the ability to pay people, people think money is the only form of currency. You have to look at what else can you offer? Can you barter? Can you give them access? Can you teach them how to podcast? Can you teach them how to do hair? Maybe you could, again, babysit. What can you offer them that's of value that they're like, that's a fair trade. I like the computer stuff, but I don't like being outside in the sun. You like, I like being outside in the sun. I could do it after work, but I don't know how to hook up PayPal payments. So boom, there's a marriage that happens and it's a symbiotic relationship. So I would encourage people to not always think that money is the only currency. And you would also be surprised who's willing to help you for free because they either A, love you or they believe in your vision, right? Money is not always the motivator. If you have something that's changing the world, you're helping youth or you're giving back to the community, you'd be surprised if what type of people would be able to help you for free. But here's the key word, if you're able to sell them on the vision, okay? If you're able to get them to buy into the bigger picture. Can you imagine people getting up in church and being like, I don't want to volunteer at church if you're not paying me? Like, people believe in the bigger vision, right? And these people are not getting paid. So, you know, think about it like that.
And I think there's something I wanted to hit on, but I actually think it's going to be better for us to wrap with. So as it pertains to the stock market on your site, you, and I think you alluded to this a little bit earlier, you talk about these trading rules that you use to help analyze on a technical and fundamental eye to keep you in winning trades longer and exiting losing trades faster. Can you elaborate on either what those trading rules mean or how you apply that strategy?
Yeah. So from over a decade of trading experience, I actually did the math. I think I've been trading for, we calculated it was 15 or 16 years now. So I'm like, wow. So the rules that I set up for myself is I typically only trade three patterns. There's a bunch of patterns, but I found the most consistent, there's about three patterns. So for myself, I don't trade outside those three patterns. I look back when I lost any money that I've typically lost, it was trading something other than those three patterns that don't have a high probability of winning or losing or being right. They didn't have that 70, 80% chance that I was going to be able to make it rain cash. So I stick to, typically three patterns. Another one of my rules is live to trade another day, which means I never, never risk my entire account on one trade anymore. Back then, I would take my whole account. I'm like, if this work out, I'm good. But I never looked at the other side. I was like, if it don't work out, I got to sell everything and move back home. So now I'm a little bit more methodical. I say, if this trade goes wrong, do I still have enough money to trade another day? Because I know I won't be right on everything, but out of 10 trades, I know I'll be right 7 times. But I don't know if the first 3 are going to be my wrong before I get to the 7, or if I'm going to be right 2 times, wrong 3, then right 4. Whatever the number is, I need to live to trade another day to get to the 7 times where I'm going to be right. So those are a couple of things. The other thing is I don't participate in binary events. A binary event is, it's either going to be a hit or a miss, which means earnings release dates, lawsuits, different things like that. If they're going to announce the verdict of if a new drug gets FDA approval or not. I used to take all my money and be like, okay, if they get approval, we rich. If they don't, we broke. Those are binary events. And that's no way to build a lifestyle around this by basing it on yes or no events. It's based on those 70, 80% probability statistic type of trade. So those are just a few of the rules that I have. And one of my favorite rules is you never go broke taking a profit. So I always say, if you got some profit, take some money off the table and then play with the house's money. But you never go broke taking a profit, which means no one trade is going to get you there. If you're up $5,000 in the trade, don't be like, well, I think I can get 10. Take the 5,000. And if you started with 10,000, now you have 15,000. You do that one more time, you have 20,000. Now you can go into 4 different $5,000 trades. You know, so that's when you start to see the exponential growth. And so just playing the long game is the key now versus I need to make $8,000 in a week. And you see how that turned out for me. I lost all my money.
And so you mentioned three patterns, and that might have been caught up in what you were just describing. But if not, what's the high level on those three patterns that you typically look at?
It's very simple. Stocks can only trend 3 ways. I haven't seen a 4th, right? Stocks go up, they go down, and they go sideways. Those are the 3 patterns. The key, and here's the thing, if your listeners may be thinking, that's super simple. Of course, we know stocks go up, go down, and go sideways. That's true. But most people can't identify when it's getting ready to go up or how long it's going to be going up for. And then they can't identify when it's going to change and turn and go down. And they don't have a strategy for making money when the market goes down or goes sideways. So for me, I'm an options trader. And so I can actually buy put options when stocks are falling. So sometimes I make more money from stocks falling than I do from them going up. And so when you get into recognizing the 3 patterns and then mixing that with the right strategy, there's nothing that you can't do in the stock market to make money, because those are the only 3 patterns. And when you know how to make money on all 3 of them, then, you know, you can become very wealthy. The problem most people have is they only know how to make money on 1 pattern. And that's what? Buy low, sell high. That's an uptrending pattern. But what happens when it's not going up? These people are dead in the water. So that, you know, that's what's important to stay in the game long term. How do you make money from all 3 possible scenarios that can come your way?
And so most of our listeners, if they're investing at all, which I think we've hit on, we try to encourage them to at least get started, which seems to be the largest hurdle for actually for most, are probably doing so through a 401k or an IRA. Do you have any different tips that you would keep in mind when investing personally or trading versus looking long term for retirement?
Yeah. So when you look at a 401k, you have to break down what these vehicles are designed to do. So a 401k is going to be number one, designed for you to use at retirement, right? If you pull it out before age 59 and a half or something like that, you'll get penalized. So that's number one, it's designed for retirement. Number two is designed for your employer to keep you at work. Why? Because they're like, hey, if you put in 3%, we'll put in 3%. So you're excited about the match, right? Like, oh, I get a free 3%, which is not a bad thing. However, you notice in that equation, at no point was that designed for creating wealth or designed for walking you off your job. And so that's what the 401k is for. An IRA is just a way for you to create one for yourself if you don't have a job that has a 401k is going to match. It allows you to put some money away, get a bit of a tax deduction, and still plan for your own retirement. Let's say if you're a plumber, self-employed, whatever the case may be. Now, when you think about how a 401k works, they go out, your employer says, hey, you can only pick from these five funds. We went to Fidelity or whoever, we got five funds you can put your money in. When you're trading or investing on your own, you're saying, I don't want these five average funds. These funds are made up of stocks. I want to kind of do open heart surgery and go inside the fund and only invest in a handful of stocks that are moving. So your company and these funds, it might be 100 stocks, but only five are really making the money. My philosophy is, how about I get rid of the other 95 and put all my money into the five that are really making me money? Then I go look for a new five. And so that's the key difference between managing your own money and allowing someone else to manage it for you. They're going to give you something that's average, something that is, you know, mirroring the market. But I'm not here to mirror the market. I'm here to beat the market. So I want to go with the four or five stocks that are outperforming the market. Or I want to go with the four or five stocks that are moving that entire portfolio versus spreading my money around to the 95 that are doing absolutely nothing, which is why some people look at their 401k and they're like, I haven't really made much. Or the most of the money you made was on the match, but it wasn't from the actual stock market because you got an average fund giving you average returns.
I like that. I like that approach. So we're going to go ahead and wrap with this. I think I'm going to see how this question goes, but because the internet is insane and we could probably go into a whole nother show in conspiracy theories on about why this is. But as soon as I like reached out to you, I'm not sure who initiated what contact. I basically started getting your featured videos. So, you know, that was scary. So, you know, it was either going through and read my emails or my conversation. You know how that goes. So I'm in the black box. But I was actually watching one of your videos. I'm not sure how many you got floating out there. But you talked about how you thought you would be when you quote unquote made it and then what you really was like. So you thought, I think you were talking about you'd be walking around in expensive clothes, but now you actually find yourself walking around in flip flops. So what changed about your mindset? And how do you think that will happen for other people once they, you know, follow your advice or, you know, when we get to this course information, they also are rich and, you know, losing and spending $100,000 like it ain't nothing.
Well, I think at the end of the day, I love the game. And so before I loved the fame, right? I wanted to look good. I wanted people to think I was important. I wanted to wear a nice suit and stuff like that. And I think just in life, as you mature and you start to think about what's really important, you know, I start to think about, you know, not going back to work ever again. That's what's important to me. So it's not a polo shirt. It's not a Louis Vuitton shoes. Not going back to work is important to me now, not looking good for people who care nothing about me. And so living in a nice house and being able to provide for my family is important to me now. So that's where my money goes now. Even though I always said, you know, once I make X amount of dollars, I was going to buy a Rolex. I was going to buy this. Then now that I'm in a place where I can afford that stuff, I don't want it. So it's just funny how you grow and change. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with buying that stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that's not where my mindset is at right now. My mindset is on legacy. My mindset is on opening up other businesses, trying to build something huge that I can pass down to my kids and my kids' kids' kids. You know, I talk to other people and I look at land where malls are developing, different things like that. And I'm like, how did they know to buy this land and that a mall would be here one day? And typically when I talk to wealthy people, they said they didn't know. Their great, great, great grandfather owned this land way back in the day. And as the suburbs start getting developed, boom, you know, we own the land. So they had to lease it from us. The, you know, the third generation kid is the one who actually developed it. But somebody way up the line had the vision to buy land or start a franchise or et cetera. So I'm looking at what can three generations later, they said, my kids said, you know what? Our great, great grandpa had the vision to start investing, had the vision to buy some random land over here or start buy a couple franchises, et cetera. So that's where my focus with my money is, which, you know, now when I go look at shirts and stuff, I'm thinking they charging how much for this shirt? The same shirt as that Target without a horse on it, you know? So
yeah, that sounded real father-like.
Yeah. So it's just not what I'm interested in anymore, because I just my interests are other places. Then I'm home most of the time, or I got a downtown Detroit office. But I'm more about comfort now than I am about style. So I'm comfortable in a T-shirt and some flip flops.
It's funny you said that, because I've been, you know, similar. Well, I guess somewhat similar on a much smaller scale, but moving in that direction. I've had, I guess, what you could call career success. And so, but I'm writing these finance pieces now. And cause like you have to reflect back on, and you're like, yeah, when I was 23, I was making 20,000. And then, I also made $5.15 an hour at my first job. I used to walk to a movie theater cause I think it was actually in spite of my parents. They're like, well, if you want a job, you can find a way to get there. And I was like, I'll teach you. And I like, you know, strolled over to this movie theater. It's like 3 miles away in the Texas summer, but it kept me humble. And what I realized after all that time, and my story was I went out and spent about $30,000 in one weekend, you know, just out here balling out. I actually got a consolidation loan, and yeah, I got a car with rims as well. So we had that in common. But when I look back at all of this and, you know, I'm slowing down now, it's actually never really the making money. The making money was really intangible. It didn't really make me happy. People, you know, always it's the money buy happiness. It was the spending of money. I like to spend the money, like, but the whole making of it is really just a mechanism so I could spend more of it. And I feel like, to your point, now how I spend it is just different, because I'm like, okay, how do I have a legacy, or how can I spend this and enrich other people's lives beyond myself instead of just, you know, going out and buying cars with rims? So I really feel like I appreciate you for saying that and showing people how it can come full circle. And I think it's that cross arc, if you will, over what you think you want and then what you actually get. Being at that top of that mountaintop, you just realize there are more mountains. At least that was the realization for me.
Absolutely. And you hit on a good point, which is the difference between what you think you want and what you really want. And what I found was I didn't really want things. I wanted freedom. And I'm living my best life right now. I'm free. I'm here throughout the day. In fact, me and my wife were probably getting ready to head to the hospital. She just texted me like, I think I'm going in labor.
Yeah, let's wrap this up.
My point, I'm watching my phone here, but my point, I almost thought I was going to have to cancel, because I'm like, I don't know if we go. But my point is I think about bringing our child into this world. I think about, you know, we have our house on the lake. I think about how I'm home in the middle of the day with the rest of the stay-at-home moms in the neighborhood. I like, that's what's important to me, that I control my time and that I'm not worrying about money and that, you know, my family wants for nothing. So that's what's important to me. Everything else is secondary, where before I thought, I want a car, I want to look good, I want to ball out, quote unquote. But when you grow up, so to speak, balling out is taking care of your family. Balling out is keeping a roof over your family's head. Balling out is I don't have to call my boss and ask, can I take time off because my wife's going into labor? I'm just home. I'm there. You know, so it's, you know, haven't even had to think about what daycare is going to look like, because I'm like, well, I'm home all day. So that, to me, that's what it's all about. And that's more than any watch, rims, car, polo shirt, nothing against Ralph Lauren. But it's just, you know, it's more than any of that stuff to me.
Yo, this has been a dope conversation. And in a lot of ways, it's reiterated other things that past guests have said in the podcast and what we've been saying to folks. So I really hope people enjoyed this one. So quick question, how old are you?
36.
Okay, cool. So you're 1 year older than us, and I wanted to make sure the people understood that. Like, so if you're in your 20s, you're like, oh, he's so far along. You have time. This has been a process, and we all go through this process. And so congrats on the soon-to-be delivered child. Want to make sure that I get that in there. And where can the people find you?
Best place to reach me is thebrownreport.com. From there, you can check out my social media. I'm on Instagram at Brown Report. I'm on Facebook at The Brown Report, YouTube, The Brown Report. But if they just go to thebrownreport.com, it's the best way to get connected to all of my content and all of my media.
All right, cool, man. So that's Jason Brown. Appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me. It's been fun.
So that was fun, man. And also congrats to Jason and his wife for the birth of their daughter. So dude literally was headed to the hospital right after we recorded, and we had no idea until he was like, sorry, fellas, I got to go. And we're like, oh, what's up, man? He's like, oh, yeah, my wife's about to give birth. I'm like, okay. All right.
truly take it one for the Paychecks and Balances team. So we appreciate that, Jason, and congratulations.
Yes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. Today's review of the week comes from JD Jade. And so the subject, real, relevant, and relatable. I've recently gotten into podcasts and I'm grateful to have come across this one. I don't typically write reviews, but I must say that I am truly impressed by the quality of the topics, guests, speakers, and of course, the knowledge of the host. So I appreciate that. If you are looking to enhance your knowledge in personal finance or gain insights on ways to enhance your career, check out this podcast. You won't regret it. So JD Jade, really appreciate those 5 stars.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that as well.
And also, I realized that we have officially surpassed 500 reviews on Apple Podcasts, and we're still maintaining a 5-star average, bro, which is kind of crazy. So thanks so much to everyone who's dropped by and left us a review, dropped by and clicked 5 stars. If you have not done so, we encourage you to do that. It lets other folks know why you're listening to PNB. And it keeps us going, man.
Yeah, I was going to hit you with the beep, 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 but you was kind of on a roll. I didn't want to throw you off or anything like that. So I appreciate that, listeners. We always love the 5-star reviews. And you can hit us in those 5 stars. We're also monitoring the hashtag PayBal if you want to find us in the social streets. And if you're wondering where that is, find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. And follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Garrett with 1T on Twitter. Apparently, that is frowned upon as Brown Ambition, if y'all listen to us on their show, has pointed out. 2 T's everywhere else on earth. I'll get that in the show notes if y'all haven't already. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
And as we mentioned up top, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email. Receive our weekly newsletter covering actual work and money tips and much more.
We had a great conversation with the ladies of Brown Ambition, so appreciate them having us on the podcast. Spent a lot of time talking about relationships and all things money, so definitely drop by and check that out. And as Marcus mentioned, you'll be able to get a link to that in the show notes. So thanks so much to everyone for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.